This program is a theoretical account of the events that occurred on the morning of July the 2nd, 1937, and thereafter. Although she was declared dead in absentia on January the 5th, 1939, the Amelia Earhart disappearance case is considered by many to be unsolved. Vanished Amelia Earhart is recorded in its entirety with the Zoom H1N microphone. Get yours now at zoom-na.com.
I'm in Morro Bay, California, a far cry from the Midwest, and one of my very favorite spots in the world. I needed a change of scenery. About a year and a half ago, we moved out to Atchison, Kansas, where the first three parts of the show recorded from. I liken the move to an author temporarily moving to the small town where his next thriller would be set. It's a good way to get to the right mindset, to get the creative juices flowing. But it's always good to come back home to the West Coast. Thus far, we've waded into the career of Amelia Earhart, and we've discussed what separated her from the other aviators of the time. At this point, AE was soaring to heights the young world of aviation had never seen, setting record after record, while also setting the example for women in aviation along the way. We've broken down the various career paths some of the other key figures in Amelia's life took, and how Amelia's career stood out and maybe pulled her away from everyone else in their field. Tonight, though, we're going to take a look at an aspect of Amelia's career that was a natural evolution of what she believed in and stood for. We're going to talk about something that brought the pioneers of women in aviation together. Well, 99 of them, at least. To say that the 99s are and always have been an integral part of aviation is an understatement. Shortly before this episode, I was gathering information on the early days of the group. I came across this passage from the official website for the 99s. Reading it will tell you all you need to know about their formation. Quote, on November 2nd, 1929, 26 women gathered at Curtis Airport, Valley Stream, New York. The weather wasn't favorable, and most drove in or came by train. The first order of business was the selection of Neva Paris as temporary chairman, then the presentation of flowers to Viola Gentry, who was recovering from a crash following an endurance record attempt. The women conducted their business in a hangar above the din of a Curtiss Challenger engine, running up as the work of the mechanics proceeded around them. Tea was served from a toolbox wagon on wheels. Eligibility and purpose were quickly decided upon. Membership would be open to any woman with a pilot's license, and the purpose was, quote, good fellowship, jobs, and a central office and files on women in aviation, end quote. Choosing a name was a little harder, though. Some offerings were the Climbing Vines, the Noisy Bird Women, Homing Pigeons, and Gadflies. My personal favorite is Homing Pigeons. Amelia Earhart and Jean Davis Hoyt put a stop to the nonsense, proposing the name be taken from the sum total of charter members. Thus, the group was momentarily the 86s, then the 97s, and finally, the 99s. The name and number stopped at 99, but the membership thereafter grew worldwide. Furthermore, if you search those charter members, you'll find a veritable hall of fame for women in aviation. Ruth Elder, Viola Gentry, Faye Gillis, Florence Klingensmith, Ruth Nichols, Louise Thaden, Mary Goodrich, Marjorie Stenson, Amelia Earhart. Individually, these women, all of them, had remarkable careers. But collectively, they changed the world. When we decided to include this episode in the limited series for Vanished Amelia Earhart, I had one choice and one choice only as the guest to represent the organization that Amelia so loved. So much so that I wrote a full interview for her before I ever asked her to join me tonight. Lucky for me, she said yes.
The 99s was founded in 1929, as I like to say, by Amelia Earhart and 98 of her close friends. There was a recognition of the women pilots at that time that they needed an organization to support themselves and to promote women pilots from both a sports and breadwinning point of view, was the language that was expressed to the potential members, and to tip each other off on what's going on in the industry. And I would hope that 90 years later that we're still fulfilling the original mission and vision of our charter members.
First and foremost, Lisa Cotham is my friend, and I'm lucky to know her. She's a trustee for the 99s and their public relations chairman. She's a pilot, an all-around Earhart expert, but most importantly, she's keen on keeping the true history and legacy of both Amelia Earhart and the 99s alive and well. And she does it with a tremendous sense of poise and a wonderful sense of humor. Lisa sat on our discussion panel last summer during the Amelia Earhart Festival in Atchison as the representative for the 99s, and on that panel, our moderator, Dr. Joshua Wolf, asked her about the history of the organization. She didn't disappoint then, and she didn't disappoint now.
The first 2 years of the organization, it was under acting leadership while they were still struggling to find their way. But in 1931, they elected their first president, and it was Amelia Earhart. And we have documentation in our files in Oklahoma City of how extensive her involvement was. Of course, there was no internet or email, so all their communication back then was by written letter and telegrams, and we have many of those correspondences in the files. I was amazed to see just how actively hands-on she was. She was constantly writing to the members to make them aware of events and circumstances, to invite them to travel with her to some events that she was participating in, and actively working to promote the mission of the organization. She used her status as a quasi-celebrity, or maybe a real celebrity, to further the causes of the organization, but she didn't do anything for her own personal gain. She actually funded a lot of the early activities out of her own pocket, such as a uniform that they were developing for all the members to wear. So no, she was in it. She was in it to make it succeed.
How's that for putting your money where your mouth is? We now know that Amelia wasn't only the official first president of the 99s, but she was also heavily involved in their early foundation. But how did the other 98 women feel about Amelia being the face of the organization? Was Amelia Earhart a strategic business move for them?
I'm sure from those charter members' perspective that it was advantageous to them to have her. There were other women in the organization who also had name recognition, like Louise Thaden, Poncho Barnes, Fegulous Wells, but Amelia was definitely heads and shoulders above them when it came to public awareness.
It's fascinating to hear about the early history of this incredibly influential group and some of the disagreements and egos that went into the early foundation. It goes to show you that while each one of the founding members cared deeply about the cause, it wasn't easy to make this formation successful right from the start. Some of the early meetings reflected some of this difficulty.
In our archives at headquarters, we have the typed transcript of a meeting that was held in March of 1930, which was right after the formation, where they were still struggling with organizational structure, officers, and such as that. And it was amazing, the arguments and the resolutions that were discussed at that time. It's about 31 pages long, so it's a very interesting document to see the struggles and the thought processes that they went through as they were forming this organization for the support of women pilots. Just from reading the transcript of this meeting, at one point one of the members got put out about something, so she got up and left the room. I think one of the officers actually resigned at that time. There had been a problem in that the ballot had been prepared for the initial elections, and one of the candidates on the ballot was tragically killed. And somebody just made some substitutions without getting back with the membership. So that caused a big tizzy over the process. I think that's what was more in view at that point was, you know, let's make this fair and do it the right way.
You'd think that there was a lot of thought that went into the formation of this hugely influential group. But history dictates that the 99s may have in fact been formed on spontaneity. And it was formed on a day that also ties directly into the history of aviation. August the 18th, 1929.
Aviation had been around for 26 years at that point, and there had been cross-country air races and closed course air races that women were not allowed to participate in. So this race was created in 1929 for all women, and there were a lot of stumbling blocks. There were some pre-race questionable events that took place during the race. There was one woman, it appeared that there may have been sabotage in her fuel line. Another one had a contaminant put in her fuel. And there was actually a fatality along the race as well. But when those women finally arrived in Cleveland, Ohio, at the culmination of the race, they got together and said, you know, we need our own organization. And that was the impetus for the foundation of the 99s. And they went from August and September of 29 until the formation in November of 29. So they did it rather quickly by snail mail.
August the 18th, 1929 is one of my very favorite days in aviation history, the Women's Air Derby. Look it up. That's homework for a future episode of Vanished Amelia Earhart. A dedicated show on this very important date coming at you in just a couple of episodes from now. When Amelia Earhart vanished, seemingly into thin air on the morning of July the 2nd, 1937, it must have had an impact on the organization that she helped found and cared so much about. After all, her fellow founders were close friends of hers. That got me curious as to how the disappearance affected them, and what role she would have played had she returned home without incident.
I don't know that it would have been a big part, but it would have been a part. I think Amelia was all about building up other women pilots and helping them achieve leadership roles. So I think she would have been there as a mentor, but not been out in front. Probably initially after the completion because of all the notoriety, but I think in the long haul, she would have been a backseat player, but there to help support the women members and the organization itself. Obviously, they were all friends with her and very upset by her disappearance, not just for her, but for what the accomplishment failed. One of the results of the disappearance was that the organization chose to honor her by creating a scholarship fund in her name. And that first scholarship was issued in 1941 for $125 for an instrument rating. As of today, we've issued about 750 scholarships totaling over $11 million to our members, all in the name of Amelia Earhart. So that was a huge impact that she had on our organization.
It's abundantly clear that Amelia Earhart's soul and spirit left a lasting impact on the 99s upon her disappearance and upon being declared dead in absentia. That impact, as Lisa mentioned, has been cause for the organization to create the Amelia Earhart Memorial Scholarship Award, which is still given out to this day. More on that in a moment. Another organization that I have a lot of respect for is the WASP. For those who don't know, women Air Force service pilots have gone down in history as an important group that have fought for their right to be recognized by the United States government as integral parts of the military. If you haven't heard of the WASP, I highly suggest that you look them up. Impressive doesn't even begin to describe it. The woman who started and championed that program? Her name was Jackie Cochran. And Jackie Cochran was a very close friend and confidant of who? You guessed it, Amelia Earhart. Listen to this next part very, very closely.
Well, a lot of the women who were in the 99s were contacted or applied to be WASP. Of course, the founder of the WASP, Jackie Cochran, was president of the 99s from 1941 to 43. So she knew the capabilities of the women and was right on target when approaching this concept to the military and making it happen. So, no, a lot of the women in the 99s were WASP, and we still have a couple of WASP living who are still in the 99s. Right before Amelia left, she had some conversations with Jackie, and after she disappeared, Jackie, who professed to have psychic ability, said she had received some messages from Amelia. And they were not in competition. They both had their own goals and they were close friends. She was appointed by Congress as an ambassador to Japan to gather information on women's roles in the Japanese Air Force during the war. That was the guise for her going over there, but she never presented whatever kind of report she should have to Congress after it was over with.
Back that last part up and replay it. That last sentence and Jackie Cochran herself are going to come up again in a later episode. And the connection just might blow your mind and send you down a rabbit hole that you'll never come out of. It's often fun to speculate on what Amelia would do, what Amelia would think. And for that reason, I thought it would be a good idea to collect Lisa's thoughts on what Amelia might think of the status of her beloved organization today and the status of women in aviation, a cause that she championed so valiantly during her aviation career.
Well, I don't think the 99s would have been as successful as it was in the early days without her. Obviously, there were other women who were achieving things, but because of the impact that she had on society, it brought attention to the organization and to women. There's still a lot of hurdles out there that women have to jump to get to their career goals. So just about every woman involved in aviation gives credit to Amelia for paving the way. She really broke the boundaries and she proved that women could do anything men could do. I think that she would be disappointed to know that women are still such a small percentage of the aviation industry. On the pilot side, we used to be able to look at statistics from the FAA, but they're not as easily obtained anymore. But from my rough estimates as of 2018, there were like 6 or 7% of pilots were women. So that's a really low percentage over the course of 90 years. I think she would be disappointed in that, but I think she would also be amazed by the things that women have done, looking at, you know, everything from the space station and space shuttles to jet flights and all the other types of flights. So yeah, I think she'd be real, real happy with what's going on.
Adding to those thoughts before we ended our chat, Lisa told me something that offers an interesting inside look at the early days in this remarkable organization. It was quite telling to hear of it because it reasserts the position of the organization and what they wanted to stand for. And as we'll learn in just a moment, it's a position that hasn't changed much over the years.
There was a letter sent to 117 women pilots in October of 1929, and it outlined their desire to form this organization. And to quote from the letter, it says, "It need not be a tremendously official sort of an organization, just a way to get acquainted, to discuss the prospects for women pilots from both a sports and breadwinning point of view, and to tip each other off on what's going on in the industry. We're not particular whether you come by train, automobile, or on two legs or just by mail, but we do hope you'll put in some kind of an appearance at the organization meeting of licensed women pilots." And that was signed by Faye Gillis Wells and several other women who were involved with the organization committee. And apparently, there was some pushback on this because 2 months later, actually on New Year's Eve, there was a letter from the acting president, Opal Coons, to a member in New York. And this member in New York, or the potential member in New York, seems to have gotten the misinterpretation of what was going on in some of the comments to this member from Opal Coons. Was, "We are not fighting for anything. We're trying to bring about a different attitude towards the girl in aviation, where she is accepted as an equal rather than spoiled as something rare and very precious. In this organization of ours, it is hoped that we can encourage girls to enter flying schools with the determination not to accept any special consideration because of her sex." So even back then, you could see how cognizant they were of the pushback and the possibility of special treatment because they were women. The letter even comments that because there were so many men doing these things, that a woman involved was a rarity, which is why it gained so much notoriety. But they were not in it for any kind of special treatment. They just wanted to be treated as equals, which sounds a lot like what's still going on today.
After getting a good education of the foundation and the values of the 99s from Lisa, I was naturally curious on how those values are being reflected in the current iteration of the organization today. I wanted to find out if the 99 still represented what Amelia wanted all these years later. And there was only one person that I could think of to call for that perspective. I called the president. No, not that one. This one.
We are an organization of over 5,700 licensed women pilots, and we're in 44 countries.
Jan McKenzie learned to fly in a tail dragger. Shortly thereafter, she became a 99. She's been an electrical engineer for over 34 years, something that Amelia Earhart would be particularly proud of. She's moved through the ranks of the organization, holding various chapter and international offices, and now she's the president of the 99s. She's the perfect person to speak on the topic of the 99s in the modern age of aviation. And like Lisa, I'm grateful that she agreed to talk to me.
We're astronauts, aerobatic champions, airline pilots, pilots who teach flight, and pilots who fly for pleasure. We're pilots who are technicians, and we're pilots that are mechanics. First and foremost, though, we are women who love to fly. To honor that legacy, we've passed on our passion for flight to women of all ages, but particularly for young women and for young girls, through demo flights, scholarships, mentoring, and just generally helping women get to love flying and start flying and be employed in aviation. We own and support the Museum of Women Pilots in Oklahoma City and the Amelia Earhart Birthplace Museum in Atchison, Kansas. Those museums help to educate and inform thousands of people about the magic of flight and the women pioneers who passed their love on to us, as we do now to others. We grew from 99 to 5,700 women pilots, and we moved from being only in America to now 44 countries. We have second, third, and even fourth generation women pilots, professional and military pilots, and racers and pilots who do it just for the fun of it. We've made flying accessible to all races, all classes, income levels, through the generous donations and bequests of our members.
It's really important to understand that the 99s go out of their way to push hard when it comes to lighting the fire underneath women, young girls especially. It's fundamentally believed, in the same way in which their first president believed, that women can do anything that men can do, and they believe it to the very core. As Jan explains, this is an organization that does not shy away from its history, and these women are not afraid to get out front and put their money where their mouths are.
Since 1941, we've given over 1,000 awards totaling more than $11.5 million. That's 1,000 women that we've helped in their aviation goals and dreams. We typically, in 1 year, provide 40 women every year an award to help them obtain their private pilot license. And we also typically give over 20 scholarships every year for advanced ratings that you need to help you move up the ladder to commercial and ATP. And so right now that fund, which is member endowed, is worth $5.5 million. The 99s have changed lives with these scholarships. And we continue to grow our ability to support women worldwide and whatever aviation goal they have.
I originally met Jan this past September at the annual induction of the International Forest of Friendship. I like to think of it as the Amelia Earhart Hall of Fame. According to its official website, the International Forest of Friendship is a, quote, living, growing memorial to the world history of aviation and aerospace. It sits nestled on a gentle slope overlooking Lake Warnock on the outskirts of Atchison. It's made up of trees from all 50 states and 36 territories and countries around the world from which its honorees reside. There are trees from George Washington's Mount Vernon estate, the bicentennial American spruce, a tree from Amelia's grandfather's farm, and the moon tree grown from a seed taken to the moon by command pilot Stuart Roosa on Apollo 14. Winding through the forest are pathways honoring those who have or still are contributing to all facets of aviation and aerospace. The original path is called Memory Lane and leads to a secluded circle of benches and a grove of trees. All of the forest walkways are 5 feet wide, and embedded in them are granite plaques engraved with the names of over 1,400 honorees. Included in this illustrious list are markers memorializing such aviation notables as Charles Lindbergh, the Wright brothers, Sally Ride, Chuck Yeager, Jimmy Doolittle, and Colonel Eileen M. Collins, the first woman to pilot a shuttle into space. In 1976, Memory Lane was designated as the first national recreation trail in Kansas. In 1991, a beautiful gazebo was dedicated to Faye Wells in honor of her leadership to the forest. A pond and waterfall honored Joe Kerrigan for his many contributions as founding co-chairman. And nestled at the very back of the forest, as if to watch over her Hall of Fame and Atchison, Kansas itself, is a statue of Amelia Earhart. The forest is open all year round from sunrise to sunset. I highly recommend that you seek it out if you're ever in Kansas. You can find more information on the forest in the show notes for tonight's episode.
Faye Gillis Wells, which was a charter member of the 99s and a noted journalist, and Joe Kerrigan of Atchison, Kansas, they co-chaired the forest from its very inception until their deaths. Faye Gillis Wells and Joe Kerrigan's sons and their families continue this string of world friendship through flight. The son of Amelia's husband, George Palmer Putnam, has graciously provided a grant to provide the legacy of the forest, and that connects it to Amelia and her legacy. The 99s today take an active part in organizing the annual ceremony every year. It's a beautiful park, an arboretum, and a peaceful place to contemplate how flying connects people all over the world, a message Amelia was carrying on her last flight to all parts of the world.
When people ask me to describe Amelia Earhart in a single word, the word I use most often is hope. Amelia provided hope for so many people. Hope to strive, hope to learn by failure, and hope to succeed when everything is pushing back against you. What do dreams know of boundaries? Nothing. Dreams know nothing of boundaries. My hope is that you're starting to see that.
One of the most important parts of the 99's mission is to honor our unique history. One of our greatest treasures is the Museum of Women Pilots, which enables us to keep and share so many of these great women's legacies and share these with the community. We also cherish our Amelia Earhart Birthplace Museum to ensure her legacy lives on. To expand our reach, we have displays on the 99s at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum and have borrowed exhibit materials from them and loaned them some of our precious historical materials from time to time, and we'll continue to do that. The museum also maintains a large archive of historical documents available to researchers in the field. All of this keeps both the histories and the legacies of our founders alive in the 21st century.
Ah, museums. Where would our history be without them? The Museum of Women Pilots is located in Oklahoma City and was dedicated there in 1999. Located on the second floor of the international headquarters with over 5,000 square feet of space, the museum contains displays and artifacts focusing on preserving the history of women in aviation, honoring their achievements of the past, as well as recognizing current achievements. In addition, archives and other resources are maintained on-site, as well as one of the largest collections of Amelia Earhart memorabilia in the world. One of the goals of the museum is to inspire young women to enter the field of aeronautics. AE would definitely approve. You may have heard of the Amelia Earhart Birthplace Museum in Atchison. If you've been following our journey thus far, you know that on episode 1, I stood on the bluffs across from Amelia's former home, now the museum, on a cold fall day. The construction of the home began in 1861 and has a long history. Annually, thousands of visitors tour the home to learn about the life of an icon. And by the way, I say life because the birthplace, much like the Museum of Women Pilots in Oklahoma, prefer to talk about how Amelia Earhart lived. Sound familiar? We'll have links to both of these incredible museums in the show notes for tonight's episode.
There's a saying that is, to be something different, you have to see something different. We need to continue to share women's accomplishments in all fields in our media today. We, the 99s, provide examples where young women can see women in the cockpit when they walk onto an airliner. They read stories about women military pilots, see women going up in space as mission specialists and shuttle pilots. They see and they can then believe, I could do that. As getting women more involved in STEM, as an electrical engineer, I did not see women in science and math and technology as I grew up. This is changing slowly. However, we need more encouragement by parents and teachers and counselors to ensure every girl or young woman is aware of all the possibilities available in life, not just our traditional ones. Increased participation of the best and the brightest women has already occurred in medicine, It can only be good for the country and the world for the best people for the job to be in that job, regardless of gender or race or nationality or whatever. The 99s provide encouragement, mentoring, networking, and financial help to aid more and more women to make their dreams in aviation come true. She is the first president, along with the other charter members of the 99s, broke a mold to satisfy their dream of flight. Our charter members started the 99s to advance the state of women in aviation. As far as we have come, with only 7% of all the pilots being women, we have a long way to go, and Amelia would be cheering us on in this work. Amelia would be astounded by the growth of the number of women pilots in the U.S. She would be proud of the women's participation with male pilots in the military and the commercial world. And she would love that we are growing the women pilots all over the world. She would be proud that the organization that she and the other 98 other women pilots created in 1929, that it's alive and kicking and growing and inspiring and supporting women to do what she loved to do. Amelia said, flying might not all be smooth sailing, but the fun of it is worth the price. I know she would see that we continue to represent what she believed in then and what we believe in now. If she could have been around to watch, I feel she would approve of how her successors have moved forward and changed with the times and helped women's aviation grow from the ceiling of her time to the flourishing, if small, plant it is now. And she would expect us and our successors to keep it growing and going to the full extent possible, now and in the future. By doing that, we would best represent what she believed and lived for.
Tonight was about 98 women. Yes, this is an Amelia Earhart story. But to understand the story, we have to understand the aspects of her life that were most important to her. As we've learned tonight, in many, many ways, the 99s are Amelia Earhart's legacy. They are a living, breathing embodiment of all that she stood for. I now know that Amelia would have loved that her friends and fellow aviators kept the organization going, and that today it's stronger than ever. While their first president disappeared under what would become mysterious and well-debated circumstances, one thing is not a mystery. The 99s have been and will always be a part of AE, wherever she is. That's going to bring episode 4 of Vanished Amelia Earhart to a close. I want to thank the 99s for allowing us to present this very special episode of the series tonight. And I want to send a very special thank you to my guests Lisa Cotham and Jan McKenzie for joining me to help educate us all. Check the show notes for tonight's episode. There's a lot of rich links and information that will allow you to dive deeper and continue this part of our journey. And now, I'm going paddleboarding. See you next time.
This is Drew Hanisch from the Travel Fuels Life podcast. Thanks for listening to this episode of Vanished, Amelia Earhart. We hope you enjoyed the show, and please visit us on social media where our team posts all of our episodes as they air news and show information, plus so much more. Go to facebook.com/vanishedAmeliaEarhart, and on Twitter and Instagram, search the handle VanishedAE. Reviews are critical to the show, and if you've enjoyed this episode, please head to iTunes to rate us and leave us a review. It really helps get the word out. Vanished Amelia Earhart is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Chris Williamson. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarris Schmidt. The opinions on Vanished Amelia Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. Chris Evan Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. Vanished Amelia Earhart is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Vanished Amelia Earhart is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2019. All rights reserved.